Let's make it happen, Captain!
From deep inside the Death Star, I'm Larry Larson.
And I'm Gov Maharaj.
Welcome to Defrag. I'm back from vacation.
How was it?
A little bit tanned. I got out of Florida I got out of Florida with only two police reports and one semi-serious car accident, so that's pretty good for Florida.
Yeah, and I mean, you're came back safe.
Yeah, yeah. Got my new machine ordered yesterday, so it's going to be a Surface Pro for me.
There you go.
Have you made the leap yet?
For Surface Pro?
Well, for any new machine.
I've actually just upgraded all of my older machines to 8, and I've just been perfectly happy with that. I've got some test machines that are Surface and Surface Pro that I use.
Okay, no need to jump then. You have a few months still.
Mm-hmm.
And as far as people wondering, you know, what is a typical Microsoft person getting for a new machine, everyone's talking about the Carbon X1.
That is a pretty sweet machine.
Yeah, not too bad. The thing that pushed me towards the Surface Pro wasn't so much the devil's nipple on the X1 as much as I just really want a good pen experience.
Right.
So I'm an old tablet PC user. I love the pen. I firmly believe in the strength of the pen. And there's a good Penny Arcade article, too, about, an artist using
Yeah, I read that one,
which was cool. And I'm very glad too that in that article he talked about XCOM being able to run on Surface Pro too, because that's going to be my other thing.
Did you find your palm detection okay on the Surface Pro?
I haven't gotten it yet, so I can't say for sure. But yeah, I think it's going to be great. So
I
like to call it palm occlusion, but. All right, that's another story. We'll get into that some other day. All right, from last week's show comments, Jay Citron asked for the exact command line for disabling hibernation. Igor writes back, need admin rights, power config dash H off. So, yeah, Igor, send us an email. I'll send you a 9 guy. Thanks for filling in for me while I was on vacation. From Daniel, he says, whenever a new version of SysInternals utilities come out, I download it into a sync SkyDrive folder, so I only have to download it once and it automatically gets replicated to all my machines that are also running SkyDrive. While this works great, one nagging thing I found is that that some SysInternal utilities embed both 32-bit and 64-bit binaries, and when you launch one .exe file, the appropriate binary gets extracted into the current folder and then run. When you close the utility, the extracted binary is silently deleted, and this is fine. And has been the way those utilities work for years. Of course, this being my SkyDrive folder, it also means that the extracted binary gets replicated to all my other machines every other time I launch these utilities and then deleted. While the utilities are small and the bandwidth wasted, While the utilities are small and the bandwidth wasted, synchronizing these temporary files doesn't amount to much. The obsessive compulsive in me is wondering whether there's a smart way to prevent this from happening.
So I did take a look at this, and I didn't find any command line switches to dictate where the extracted files would go.
Yeah.
But did come up with a semi-reasonable workaround in that if you don't sync the actual executable for the...
Just give Gove a minute while he logs in.
If you don't sync the executable for the sysinternal tool, but you sync the zip that it comes in,
yeah.
Then when you double-click the zip file, it will get extracted into a temporary location outside of your synced folder.
Okay.
So that will make it so that you're not constantly syncing back and forth these temporary files.
Okay.
I'll also be talking to Mark about seeing if we can disable loading it into that temporary directory and actually making it go into the, you know, temp files.
Yeah. Okay, cool. From Chris, is there a way to set a grace period between when the computer puts a display into low power mode and when it locks a computer? I tried setting a screensaver grace period in the registry, but as I expected, that didn't work. My current solution is to just set a blank screensaver for a minute less than my power settings. Thanks, and all. As always, I love watching the show. I don't know if I've conditioned people to say that or they actually love it.
I'm pretty sure it's Pavlovian.
Yeah.
I was actually looking at this right before the show. I don't use screensavers at all. Like, I've just never liked them.
Yeah.
But I actually just, in the middle of the show, just thought of a potential way of doing this. You can go to your power option, choose when to turn off the display. And what you can do is dim your display to, you know, the lowest possible brightness.
Mm-hmm.
Change that to a time that is different from turning off and putting the computer to sleep.
Okay.
So if you change those timings, it'll appear as if you've got a blank screensaver, but it hasn't really locked yet.
Mm-hmm.
That would be an approach using just the user interface. Otherwise, the other approach that he came up with setting a blank screensaver for a different time is perfectly reasonable.
Okay. The other thing, too, is if you're on your corporate environment, there might be a group policy sec that just you're not.
Yeah, all bets are off if you're in a domain environment.
Okay. From Andre, can you please answer this question, Link? I'd also like to know this as well. So the question comes from TechNet, and it says, Windows 7 used to disable Superfetch automatically if it detects a fast SSD as a system drive, but Windows 8 doesn't. In this respect, I found an interesting statement from Intel in the help section of the SSD toolbox. Quote, in Microsoft Windows 8, Superfetch functions differently than previous versions of Windows and should not be disabled for an Intel SSD. My question, what's the difference between Superfetch service in Windows 7 and Superfetch service in Windows 8? What did MS change, and why does it now make sense for an SSD?
So instead of having the service off for the entire machine, what we want to do is leave it on in case there are mixed drives on the system. You have SSDs, you have non-SSDs. You have an SSD-like configuration, but we can't tell it's an SSD. So you have SSD in RAID, for example, or hard drives in a very, very fast RAID configuration, where you can still get the benefits of Superfetch. So instead of just turning it off for the machine, we have detection that will say, hey, what are the performance characteristics of this drive? And we will disable or enable dynamically.
Okay. Cool, okay.
So we're just a wee bit smarter in Win 8 than we were in Win 7.
I'm not surprised. All right, from David, Defrag and Defrag Tools are my favorite shows. Well, that makes me twice as happy as Gove. Thank you. I've been running Internet Explorer release preview on Windows 7 SP1. Occasionally, I find two iExplorer EXE processes running after I've closed IE down, and the window has disappeared. They will hang there indefinitely until I use the Process Explorer to kill them. I've not been able to isolate the circumstances which caused this to happen. The only add-ons are Adobe Reader and Flash. The Intel Driver Check utility, ActiveX, and Easy List tracking protection list. I've put some screenshots of this on SkyDrive, Link. Can you suggest how I go about getting to the root cause?
So first thing I would try is run IE in no add-on mode.
Mm-hmm.
So that will get rid of all of the add-ons. See if you get that two process hanging around. The other thing is that IE10 has gone RTM.
Yeah, that's what
on
I was going to say.
So upgrade to the RTM version, see if you still see it.
Mm-hmm.
May have been a bug that we fixed. If you're still seeing it on the release version of Win 7 with IE10, get some dumps of the processes. So if you just go to Task Manager, again, this is the easy way of getting the dumps. Go to details, you know, pick your process, IE, and create dump file.
Okay.
Do that on the two processes that you've got hanging around and send those.
Okay, cool. All right, from Pedro, I just got a new desktop machine at home and I'm having some trouble partitioning the drive. It came with a single 1 terabyte drive with about 800 gig usable. I always like to keep my OS app separate from my data and usually just go with two separate drives. In this case, I'm trying to do it with two partitions. I'm trying to use the disk management utility in Windows to create the two partitions and give about 200 gig for app OS and the rest for data. When I try to shrink the OS one, I cannot go below 400 gig or so, even though only about 30 gig are in use. I've been reading that this could be due to unmovable files, but I can't seem to figure out what they are or how to move them.
So what you can do, first of all, and we've gone back and forth, so if you go and defrag your C drive, that might help. Other thing to do is to disable your hibernation file, disable your swap file, disable your page file, temporarily, re-defrag your system again, and then re-enable the hibernation, swap, and page file.
Yeah.
And see if you can get down below that 400 gig. If that still doesn't work, you're going to need an offline partition manager,
okay,
of which there are numerous ones out there. Just make sure that it is properly working for NTFS.
Okay, cool. All right, next question is a good question. I have a PCI video card and it has two HDMI and some other port. Total three ports, but only allow two monitors to display, which is pretty common.
Yep.
I was wondering if I enable built-in VGA on the motherboard, will it mess up my video card display? Meaning, will it also work, or only VGA on the motherboard, will that work? I'm doing this so I can have three monitors instead of two. It's a good question because a lot of times, especially if you build your own machine, there's going to be a integrated video card on the motherboard.
Mm-hmm.
And I always wonder, you know, could I just turn that on and use that as well as my video card? Or is that going to cause problems?
In fact, I've recently done this, built my own machines that have this capability. The thing that you're going to want to check is in the BIOS whether or not your integrated mode will take over.
Mm-hmm.
Entirely, and what the startup order is for the cards when you're booting up. Because
I've never seen a setting in the BIOS that lets me pick the order of.
It definitely depends on the type of system that you're running on, the type of motherboard, and the type of BIOS.
Yeah.
But usually, what'll happen is it'll detect an add-in card, and then it'll disable the integrated, the IGPU is what mm-hmm. is labeled in a lot of BIOSes, or integrated display. Or, you know, there's a lot of different terms for it. So if you add in a card, it may completely disable it. So you'd have to go in and say, no, I want to leave it enabled. And you'd also have to say, which one do you want to have preference first? So which monitor is supposed to start up first?
Yeah.
You can have your integrated start up first. You can have your PCI. Hopefully this is PCIe and not actually PCI.
Yeah.
PCIe card start up first, or it can start up second. It depends really on which one that you want to have. Mm-hmm. And then you'd want to assign.
If you're using three monitors anyway, it might not matter.
It might not matter, right? But you know, depending on what kind of monitor someone had, you might have a high-res screen attached to your external or your PCIe card. You might have a lower-res screen attached to your internal card. So yeah, it shouldn't matter. You may have issues. Make sure your BIOS is updated to take full advantage of it. It'll depend on, you know, are you running a Sandy Bridge, an Ivy Bridge. Is it Intel integrated graphics? Is it NVIDIA Ion graphics? There's so many different variations on this. You know, is it AMD integrated graphics? Is it a hybrid display? There's so many weird things that can go on in these systems. But for the most part, yes, you should be able to do this. You should be able to drive three monitors.
Yeah, and if you're thinking about playing Flight Sim 10 with that third monitor,
I wouldn't.
You're probably going to be sorely disappointed.
Correct.
Unless you're using it as a control cluster or something. Who knows?
Yeah, or it's possible that it's a DX10, DX11 chip.
Who knows?
And it could handle it well.
Yeah, mileage may vary. All right, next question. I currently run Windows 7 on my laptop, but it's on the way out and need to purchase a new one. Can I purchase a Windows 8 machine and know that Carbonite will successfully do a system restore to my new laptop? In other words, if the backup is from a Windows 7 machine, will I be able to do a full restore on a Windows 8 machine? I don't think we can speak to Carbonite, but what about a Windows backup?
Well, again, what kind of backup are we actually talking about here? Are we talking about a full system image replacement so that you're replacing Windows 8 with Windows 7?
Yeah.
You know, is that what you're buying the machine for? I don't know. If you're saying, well, what is Carbonite backing up? If it's just backing up your data and files and stuff, then yeah, you should be able to restore that without any issues on Windows 8, as long as your paths are the same. You know, if you're at C:\user's username, documents, blah, if that hasn't changed, then Carbonite should be able to restore that without an issue. But if we're talking about full system restoration, that's a lot trickier because what you're trying to do in this case is restore from one type of machine to a different type of machine. Drivers could be completely off. The activation state would be completely off unless you're going from, say, the same OEM, the one OEM to the same OEM upgrade that or replacement that might work.
Mm-hmm.
You know, because OEM machines have the built-in activation.
Yeah.
So that, again, it could work. I cannot say for certain whether or not it will work. The best that I could say is if you're just backing up data, you should not have a problem.
Yeah, and if they're thinking that they might be able to skip reinstalling all their apps,
no.
You should reinstall all your apps on the new system.
Yeah, so. Again, if the backup is, hey, I've backed up applications and files, that one is going to be really interesting because unless the apps are no install,
mm-hmm.
you know, then you're not going to be able to just
They're
slot that over.
They're few and far between, so.
Yeah, there are some. I actually go out of my way to find portable apps just for that reason,
yeah.
right?
Yeah.
So if I have certain types of application like PDF readers, stuff that mm-hmm. should have no reason being installed per se.
Yeah.
You know, I just want an XE that runs that'll display a PDF.
Yeah, I've got a bunch of portable apps I use on a thumb drive that I just like.
Exactly.
Because they're portable. You know, you take them with you and whatever mm-hmm. machine
you update
you're on.
Whenever you feel like it. You know?
Yeah. All right, pick of the week time. The first one from SiliconAngle.com, their blog. Mind control could be the future of gaming. There's a lot of different, it's hard. Is this a NUI device? I guess it would be a NUI device.
Mm-hmm.
It's natural to think.
Mm-hmm.
For some, yeah. yeah, I won't talk about Congress. But, this is a NeuroSky mind control. And this is something that will detect some of the surface electromagnetic activities from your brain
mm-hmm.
And interpret that into something that your computer can work with. And so the idea is that you could do some things with brain power. So we're getting into Jedi territory here, which is kind of cool. I'm looking forward to seeing this. There's a few other new devices coming out, like the Motion and mm-hmm. Things like that. So, yeah.
I mean, this could have like amazing implications for people with certain types of disabilities.
Exactly. Yeah.
You know, it's
there's also
opens up an entire world for them.
Yeah. The other one is Toby's got the new eye tracking bar that mm-hmm. you can stick on your laptop too or desktop, whatever, actually do eye detection. So, really interesting when you think about you know what happens when you have Kinect and Motion and this and eye track. You're halfway into the Borg, baby.
Yeah, the human-machine interface is definitely going far beyond the tactile input of, you know, hands on a keyboard and a mouse, right? You know, we went from that. We have voice interaction. But, you know, this is really the next logical step, right? Why should I have to even move a mouse if I want to go somewhere? It's like, you go, you think, hey, I want that link. You should be able to just say, go to that link, right?
Yeah, and I really like the idea of this. I've always wanted an EEG for my computer, and this is a good first step. I mean, this isn't like a full EEG or anything, but it's going to give you some usable data that you can work with.
I've often thought about what it would be like to scan your head.
Yeah, imagine that, the horrors that you'll pull out of there, yeah. But no, the main thing is, I mean, if you're very good at something, if you're a performer or an athlete or something like that, you might be in a certain brain state when you do well mm-hmm. that you're not in when you don't do well. And you can't really tell what brain state you're in unless you can see it. So having some kind of visual mechanism to show you that can help you get in the zone, you know?
Kind of like when you film football training, right?
Yeah.
You know, so you film the practice and then you review it afterwards and say, hey, you know, this is what can go better. This is what you're doing wrong. Or, you know, same thing with basketball. Mm-hmm. Any sport, right?
Yeah.
It's about the reflection, self-reflection, and getting better at it and seeing what you're doing potentially wrong. See what you can do better. This is what you're doing good. Is what you focus on. Like, that could definitely help in a lot of cases.
One limitation with this is that it only does one hemisphere. But I did write the person behind this, and he said, no, there's no reason you can't wear two of them. So
I'm sure he'd like to sell two of them to you.
Yeah, awesome. So there you go. Next pick of the week we have is it a pick anti-pick, would you say?
No, I'll call it an interesting.
All right, it's interesting. So let's look at this. View folder sizes in Windows with Native File Explorer. So this is a little app that you can install, 32-bit, 64-bit. And it'll show you the folder size off to the right, which has not been in Windows for a while.
Nope.
So first of all, tell us what happens when you install something like this.
You might notice, you're probably guaranteed to notice a perf degradation.
There's a reason we don't do this in Windows.
There is an absolute reason we don't do this in Windows. We used to have it. We found through, you know, lots of various telemetry that most people didn't use it.
Yeah.
And there was a definite perf hit while trying to enumerate folders constantly on the drive.
I'll admit it looks a little junky, too, because your folders are usually huge. And
right.
So you got these huge numbers off to the right of your folders. And I really don't need this for every folder. There might be a couple of folders I'd like this for.
And that's exactly what we found. You only need it for a few folders, and you need it relatively infrequently.
Yeah.
Which is why you just right-click properties, and then you get the size of the folder.
And a lot of times, too, it's not just the size of the folder that I'm looking for. I want to know how many files are in that folder. So that kind of matters as well.
Which is, again, brought up by the properties.
Exactly, yeah. But, here's the nice thing with Windows. You can do just about anything you want. If you want to install this, if this is something that's really important to you so you can see, the sizes of all the folders on your machine,
Absolutely.
There you go.
Yeah, it works on everything. I know that we've talked about other apps that are, tried and true that are similar to this, like WinDirStat.
Yeah, yeah. And you'll notice, when you run WinDirStat, it takes a while for it to populate. So that should tell you. I mean, if you run that, you can kind of get a judge for how long that would take system-wide. And do you want your file explorer to be that slow?
Right.
I don't. But I like the idea of this. So, yeah. There you go. Again. You make the decision. You make the call.
Right.
All right, well, that's the show for this week. If you have questions, you can write us at defragshow@microsoft.com or you can leave comments in the show notes. We like the back and forth of the email, so that's our preferred method. So that's the show for this week. See you next week.
Take care.